Blog Talk Radio.
In Dallas, Texas, on Saturday, November the 18th, a very windy, but otherwise extremely nice day here in the Dallas area. We're going to talk about some of the stories of the day today. We're going to continue our conversation about the Clinton reckoning. I have a post at the American Thinker about that. And really what you're seeing with what they're calling the Clinton reckoning is, I believe, the corruption of the Democrat Party. This is a party that decided back in 1998, to basically make a pact with the devil to protect Bill Clinton. And for the last 20 years or so, or 19 years or whatever it is, since the Monica Lewinsky scandal, I think it's actually 19 years, they've been basically living a lie. And now it's all, you know, they're having to face it. It doesn't help that one of their popular senators, Al Franken, is also involved in a sexual assault or sexual misconduct, to be more exact, situation. But I think, you know, as I say, they were living a lie. They were basically saying to themselves, no, those women who were claiming this and that against Bill Clinton, were not telling the truth. Well, it turns out that whether they were telling the truth or not, I mean, we don't know. But they had a pretty good case against Bill Clinton, I think. And now it's just all blowing up, and the corruption that you're seeing in the party, the arguments between the party, with the senator of New York now saying that maybe Bill Clinton should have resigned back in 1998. It's all creating a lot of commotion within the party. But I think it all goes back to what I said before. They made a pact with the devil, and now they got to live with it. They got to live with it, and it's not a not a pretty situation at all. Anyway, I have that post over at the American Thinker tomorrow morning if you want to check it out. I also have it at Twitter, and I have it at my in my blog as well. I'm going to be talking on Sunday morning. Hopefully my post will be available Sunday morning about what is happening in Cuba. You may remember that there were some attacks, some sonic attacks against American diplomats in the island. Well, it turns out we got some related information over the last couple of days. It turns out that some of Cuba's political prisoners were talking about the fact that they were also targeted by the Cuban government with electronic or sonic attacks during their time in prison. And I remember when I read that book by Armando Valladares, you know, Against All Hope, that he talked about all the different kinds of torture and all the kinds of things that the prisoners were put through. And I myself have spoken to many political prisoners, and the stories of the abuse and the torture that many of them were put through. I mean, you cannot even repeat it on the radio. That's how obscene it is, how horrible it is. And so the fact that Cuba had this technology, the fact that Cuba had this kind of electronic technology to attack people with it, certainly opens up the possibility that it was the Cuban government that was behind the attack. Again, we don't know. The State Department has not basically explained what happened, other than U.S. diplomats were attacked in Cuba. But the fact that Cuba was using this technology against its own political prisoners certainly raises the possibility that this could have been, as some people like to say, something that went wrong. Maybe it was not supposed to be an attack. Maybe they were just testing it or whatever, and it got out of control. But whatever the case may be, Cuba had the technology to do it, and that's what I think is being probably looked at in Washington, D.C. at the moment. So we'll see how that goes. I should have that story out on hopefully on Sunday morning. I'm also working on a post about the city of Rio de Janeiro. You know, for years, we've always thought about Rio de Janeiro as a you know, sort of a big play city. I mean, it's like one of the great cities in the world if you want to go have a good time. Great beaches, great hotels, great restaurants, just a lot of fun. It was a city where you go have a lot of fun. You have big carnivals. That's the image of Rio. For decades, it was just a big fun city, one of the big capitals of the world to have fun, if you will. But that's not the case of Rio right now. Rio is undergoing a very serious outbreak in violence. A lot of it is related to the drug cartel. Brazil has become a huge distribution center for cocaine. The cocaine that goes to Europe, much of it comes through Brazil. And I guess it gets sent to Africa, and then from Africa, it goes to Europe. The bottom line is that Rio has now become sort of like Colombia in the 1980s or Mexico more recently, where you have huge cartels and they're basically fighting for territory. So that's what's happening in Rio. You have these cartels, these gangs, if you will, fighting each other for territory because they want access to better routes or whatever it may be. And it has turned Rio into an extremely violent city. I mean, just a horribly violent city. And that's what the article that I hope to have out on Monday will be dealing with. The reality is that when you have this kind of cartel violence, or this kind of demand, I should say, for cocaine or illegal drugs, and then you add on that huge unemployment in Brazil because of the bad economy, it's a perfect storm. You have lots and lots of young men who are candidates to be in the drug business. They can make good money, and obviously they can be employed and do something and make some money. And that is creating, I think that's kind of the perfect storm. The demand for illegal drugs, especially cocaine, and the fact that you have so many unemployed young people, it's just creating an extremely difficult situation down in Brazil. Where does it go? I don't know. But politically, this is just going to be very difficult for the government of Brazil. They're already having a lot of corruption. They're just having a lot of problems. And all of this is just going to make it, frankly, a heck of a lot worse. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back right after you hear from one of our... This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and let's get back to our stories of the day. One of the big stories of the day, of course, is Jerry Jones, the owner of the Cowboys, who seems to have – he seems to be at war right now with the NFL, particularly the commissioner. Now, there's a lot of things going on. Jerry Jones, of course, has or owns one of the most profitable – I mean, absolutely most profitable sports franchises in the world, the Dallas Cowboys. So he's always been the kind of guy who likes to push his weight around in these NFL meetings. So in that sense, there's really nothing new. Jerry has always been a very powerful force within the NFL. Right now, Jerry is angry at the commissioner for a couple of things. Number one, for the 6-game suspension of his running back, Elliott, Jerry Jones continues to believe that this was a travesty, that it should have never happened. And when you take Elliott out of this team, out of this roster for 6 games, I mean, that's a big loss for a team that is fighting for a wild card position right now in the NFL. So Jerry's mad about that as well. But I think he's also mad about the commissioner's lack of leadership when it came to dealing with the situation with the players and the national anthem and all of that. I think that way down deep inside, I think that's what's really bothering Jerry Jones, that he feels that, you know, the commissioner kind of, you know, he had the opportunity to exercise some authority and he didn't. And in fact, on this, I happen to agree with Jerry Jones. I think the commissioner should have told Colin Kaepernick a year and a half ago, Colin, let's not make a big deal out of it, but if you keep doing it, you're going to get suspended. He never did that. So as a consequence, the situation has gotten out of hand. Now you're having ratings problems. I just read a story yesterday that they're looking at some big losses in the ratings. Now, it's not all because of the protests. There are other factors going on, other things going on in the watching of NFL games. I think they probably have too many games during the week. They should just focus on being a Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening game. That's how the game should be played. Maybe Monday night is okay because of the tradition of Monday night football, but that's what they should do. Play on Sundays, play Sunday night, and play on Monday night. All these other games on Thursday, I think that's just killing the sport, killing the game, because I think you're risking the players to a lot of injuries. So there's a lot of things going on, but there's no question that Jerry Jones is mad at the commissioner because he doesn't feel the commissioner is exercising leadership. And on that particular point, as it relates to the players kneeling and the national anthem and all of that, I think Jerry Jones is exactly right on that topic. So we'll keep an eye on the story, but I have a feeling that this is going to go on for a while between Jerry Jones and the commissioner. I don't think Jerry Jones is going to leave the scene. So perhaps the commissioner is going to have to look for another job. We'll see what develops on that. There's a great story, getting back to the politics for a second. There's a great article that our friend Monica Showalter wrote at the American Thinker about the case against Senator Menendez. As you may know, Senator Menendez was not found guilty a couple of days ago by a jury after a long, long trial. And he was being accused, I guess, to make a long story short, of doing favors for his friends, something that senators do all the time. So a lot of people began to suspect, why did they go after Menendez? Why did they go after Menendez? We're basically helping his friends. And Andy McCarthy came up with a theory that maybe they're going after Menendez because Menendez was a Democrat who opposed not only the Iran nuclear deal, but was very critical of the Cuba deal as well. And some people thought that this was the White House getting back at Menendez for those two actions. I think Monica Showalter, who wrote this article, has a fantastic point here. I wouldn't be surprised if this is, in fact, what was going on. You know, the White House getting back at Menendez for being a Democrat who decided to oppose the Iran nuclear deal as well as the Cuba deal. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if that is, in fact, what was going on, that they were getting back at Menendez. Obviously, we don't know the whole story, but it fits in. It fits in because otherwise, I don't know exactly how you go after a senator for basically taking care of his friends. I don't know. I just have a real difficulty with that. It looks like Senator Franken is going to go to the Ethics Committee, which is, as far as I'm concerned, a joke. I don't know. I don't know what the Ethics Committee is going to do. What are they going to say? That Senator Franken engaged in bad behavior? I don't know. I mean, I don't know what the Ethics Committee is going to do. But it looks like he's going to go there, and we'll see what happens. But I wouldn't be surprised if he resigns pretty soon, because it's beginning. There's a lot of Democrats out there, I think, who are beginning to realize that Senator Franken and many of these other Democrats, as we said at the top of the show, made a pact with the devil. And this is what happens when you don't go after people who engage in sexual misconduct, as President Clinton did himself many years ago. Just a quick note on this day in history, of course, Gettysburg, the Gettysburg Address, will celebrate another year, 154 years on November 19th. That's Sunday tomorrow. One of the great American speeches, I have a post that I wrote a few years ago for the American Thinker, where I say 272 words. That's the length of the speech. I mean, it's pretty remarkable when you think about it. 272 words, but probably the greatest American speech of all time. No question about it. Certainly presidential speech of all time. So the Gettysburg Address will be 154 tomorrow. And on this day in 1956, Sandy Koufax hung it up. He was only 32, but he was having so many problems with his arm that he decided that he could no longer pitch. In fact, he thought he might lose his arm if he kept on pitching. So Sandy Koufax retired on this day in 1966. He went into the Hall of Fame 5 years later, as you would expect. Have a wonderful day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. We'll talk to you later.